This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
We're doing hour number one again.
Just deja vu all over.
Daylight savings time will do that. She's a mother. Hour number two here on Football Sunday. Watch your NFL, but keep us on the dial. Keep us on the radio dial. Keep us on the app. Keep us on your phone. Tablet, smart speaker, whatever you're doing, as these 10 a.m. games get started here in just a moment's notice. But let's jump over to the college football world. Most importantly, your Oregon Ducks get a win at the Big House. They are now 9-0, first 9-0 start to a season since 2012. The Oregon Ducks, they go into Michigan as 14.5 point favorites. I'm sure there were some people that were happy about how that game ended. I personally wanted them to win by more than 14.5. I very much wanted them to score that touchdown at the end. Thank you very much, Dan Lanning, for not holding back there. Definitely could have just need the ball out, but
Can I say thank you as well? I threw bankroll management out yesterday, and
thank you.
I put my entire or almost my entire betting account amount onto Oregon to cover that 14. I thankfully I didn't get 14.5, so I was pushing at the end. I would have gotten my money back, but wow, Dan Lanning, thank you for scoring that garbage time touchdown.
But the Ducks, they win 38-17. Listen, you will never take a road win, especially in Michigan, in the Big House, for granted. That was a great win. I mean, they scored the most points against Michigan at Michigan so far this year. So that is another feather in the cap for this Oregon Duck team. You just wanted to see a dominant victory. Was it dominating the whole entire time? No. I mean, there were a couple moments. I mean, what needs to start happening is faster starts out of halftime break. That is the one thing that needs to start happening. But what I loved was seeing Dylan Gabriel have another great game. Jordan James eclipsing another 100-yard mark. And we're starting to see some of these other receivers come to life, which is going to be needed because did not look very good for Tez Johnson on the sideline, getting injured on the third play of the game. Looks like maybe a separated shoulder, maybe a broken collarbone. I don't know if we've seen just yet if there has been a report out on what that is exactly, but after...
We're not going to hear exactly what it is.
No.
Dan Lanning keeps
it close
to the vest.
Upper body injury, as they say.
But yeah, when it's in a sling and Tez Johnson was in street clothes by halftime and then actually had to go back to the locker room again, I don't know if you heard, so it sounds like they were having trouble with it while he was still standing there, even after he got out of his dress. It's just like, ugh, that ain't good.
Yeah, so you're going to need the receiver room to step up now. It was nice seeing Justice Lowe. I mean, he finished with, it felt like 5 or 6 catches yesterday at least. Yeah, he finishes with 6 catches for 45. Terrence Ferguson back in the fold. Good to see him back and healthy. But Trayshawn Holden, we are a few weeks removed from the spitting incident against Ohio State. And now he is very much back in the fold, going 6 catches for 149. Also, Evan Stewart, he did get a touchdown yesterday, but he should have got 2 if it wasn't for an offensive lineman downfield. One of the most insane grabs I have ever seen. And he definitely should have had that touchdown.
Yeah, what does Pat Mahomes say? That play should have counted because it was so cool?
Because it was so cool.
There you go.
Based on cool factor, we are picking up the flag That is the rule there.
It sucked. It was just almost such a perfect play, but because Dylan Gabriel faked the run, one of his linemen
booting out a little bit left, started to
make that block upfield because he thought he was going to run, and then that's at that moment when Gabriel tossed it over the top, and at the moment that he tossed it, that referee threw the flag, and it's like, dang it!
So, good game overall. Again, I think that the biggest improvement has got to be getting out to those better starts in the second half, keeping that foot on the gas pedal. Michigan started to get a little bit momentum, and, you know, give credit where credit is due. Davis Warren for Michigan played a little bit better than anticipated. That offense played probably a little bit better than anticipated. So that's what you want to see, is just maintain that momentum going into the halftime locker room and into halftime. And That would be the biggest thing coming out of this one. And then again, the injuries, not just Tez Washington, but Harper, right guard, going down for the Ducks. I mean, this offensive line has played so fantastic this year, ever since the first few games, and solidified. So seeing one of your offensive line, and then they went right after the backup right away. Mason Graham for Michigan, who's going to be a first round pick, he just bull rushed the backup guard. I forget who was in, but they were able to get to Gabriel. It wasn't a sack, but they just showed that they are vulnerable.
Well, if it was Pickard, I couldn't see who it was either, but if it was Pickard, we understand why. Because I don't know if they have another injury on the line, if they're going to go right back to Charlie Pickard, who was the kid that they had at center after moving Laulu over to guard, who was supposed to be their original starting center. So if it's Pickard coming in again, like, yeah, that's probably going to be an issue. We heard former Oregon Duck lineman Jeff Schwartz talking on his podcast and then even tweeting out several times, like, this kid cannot play at this level. And I'm sorry, not trying to knock the guy, but at least it's obvious to this point he is not ready to play Oregon football.
He's just a kid, Jordan. Dear God.
I get it, but he probably shouldn't be in there.
Marcus Harper, Dan Lanning shared an update on Marcus Harper's injury after the game. Dan Lanning, quote, "He told me in the locker room he's going to be fine. Obviously, we want to make sure we get him assessed and take a look at that, but I don't know that we have an update right now." So
he walked off under his own power, which was good to see. Yeah. A lot different than the Tez injury.
So the Ducks, they get the win. They will come back home and they will face the mighty Toros of Maryland next week, who had a bye week. So Maryland's going to be coming off of a bye. But as the trend that we've seen in the Big Ten, teams having to travel 2+ time zones
to face our opponent,
it has not gone well for those teams.
And this is Maryland's longest flight of the season, I believe, because USC went to Maryland. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm looking at their schedule right now. They've gone to Minnesota, they've gone to Indiana, and they've gone to Virginia.
So 2 hours maximum to this point?
Yeah, I mean, looking at that, I would say that Minnesota's the longest flight.
Yeah, maybe three from there. Maybe. Yeah,
so this is going to be, Oregon, I don't know what actually, let's find out right now, because I was saying last night with my buddies after the game that, and I'm not looking, but I said that they should open, and it's probably not going to be this because it's a lot, as a 28.5-point favorite against Maryland.
I said 3 touchdowns, but okay.
It's at home, and again, that's probably way too much, but again, Maryland is not good, and Oregon is very, very good. So the line, I don't see anything just yet. I'm going to have to jump on Vegas Insiders and see what they put down there. But the Ducks, they get the win against Michigan. They should be going into Wisconsin week 10-0, plain and simple. There is no reason for them to have to worry about this Maryland game. Just take care of business. Take care of business, for God's sakes.
Yeah, excited to see what Oregon's going to be able to do hosting Maryland for. I'll have to look at the numbers to see, like, if this has ever happened before, if it's like the first time in like 40 years.
What the Maryland-Oregon tradition history is
the
like.
The Ducks-Terrapins historical matchup history. Yeah, no, I'm interested to see Maryland come here and just kind of see a new team. It's kind of the fun part of the Big Ten, because really, I expect Oregon to get the easy win, and thankfully, they were able to get it done against Michigan in fairly easy fashion for most of the game. But two things that I want to see them improve on, by the way. One, and that is same thing as you, Joe, and that is them coming out of the second half and actually being ready. That 3-and-out against an Ohio State, I mean, they're lucky if they get the win against a team like Ohio State or like Alabama in the college football playoff if you come out of the second half and you go 3-and-out, whether or not you're the first guys to get the ball or not. Like, you've got to have a better plan than that. And I don't know if it's the play calling. I don't know if at those particular moments, like, Michigan just read exactly what y'all were doing, but it just didn't seem like Oregon was ready at that point. And it's not just against Michigan. They gave this stat out, Will Ortner and Ryan Buckley did last night on our Ducks postgame scoreboard show. Every single quarter besides the third, Oregon has scored like 20 to 40 points.
Yeah, I
want to
say
season.
That it's they've scored like 3 points.
Yeah, yeah. Oregon is literally in the third quarter all season scored 3 points. It's been one of the heel or one of their Achilles heels, and it's just super frustrating to see a team that we thought last year kind of had some issues, like playing a full 60-minute game, coming out to start the game, coming out to start the second half. Well, seems like they fixed half of that, but they haven't fixed, you know, everything. And I understand to take, you know, a few games to kind of get all these transfers in on the same page and to get everybody gelling, you know, that's fine. Early season struggles, like a Boise State win by 3, that makes a little bit more sense to me. But now, at this point, 9-0, you should be coming out of the second half bull rushing the other team. Michigan is not good. And then the second thing that they need to improve on is keying in on any team that has one weapon and one weapon only. Colston Loveland absolutely killed y'all yesterday. He went for 112 yards. He was the only target that Davis Warren had. And I guess to answer that, double team the hell out of the dude all the time. Make anybody else beat you. And maybe I'm wrong. I'm no defensive coordinator, but I feel like it's much better to let the other lesser athletes like Tyler Morgis, like Samaj Morgan, like Peyton O'Leary, force them to be the ones to be athletes and get the touchdowns and actually beat you and get those tough catches up the middle instead of their best option in Colston Loveland. I did not like that Oregon just kind of let him go. Against Ohio State, when you got Jeremiah Smith, when you got Emeka Ekpuga, you get it. They're going to give up 80 to 100 yards. One or two of them's probably going to score a touchdown in each game. That's just what Ohio State does. But when Oregon faces off against a team like Michigan that's just not good anymore this year and they've only got one weapon, I don't want to see that weapon do anything. So yeah, those two things. Just come out better in the third quarter, come out stronger, and key in on the one weapon that a team has.
Well, yeah, I think Davis Warren had just played better than anybody was anticipating. I mean, he was making some good throws. He was, yeah, I didn't turn the ball over. I think that's one thing that you want to see improved as well, is defensively start getting a little bit more pressure. I mean, Mateo Uyunglele, he did have that forced pressure that led to a fumble Davis Warren it fumbled off the backside of one of his linemen. But I would, you know, no turnovers force it. I don't know if they got a sack yesterday.
No, they did not. And Davis Warren did have a lot of time to throw. And that is credit to Michigan's not really good. They don't have great skill players or a decent quarterback. But if you give any quarterback 6 to 8 seconds to throw, it's going to go badly for you on the defensive end.
Yeah, so the Ducks, a couple injuries, but hopefully Marcus Harper is going to be back next week, and you'll still have a fully healthy offensive line. Tez Johnson, though, that's going to be a killer, but that's where, again, you're just going to need a lot of these receivers. But, I mean, you look at you're five deep as far as options go.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Holden, Lowe, Evan Stewart, Terrence Ferguson, Kenyon Sadiq, you're looking pretty good as far as depth, but man, it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of this season goes without Tez Johnson. Hopefully back maybe for a playoff run.
Thank God they got Terrence Ferguson back from his appendectomy, because with that addition, that allows Kenyon Sadiq possibly to slide out, play some of the slot, and then maybe catch some of those middle balls that Tez Johnson isn't there. And also, guys, Duck fans should be so proud of Treshawn Holden and having a guy like that represent your team. I mean, so much different than like a Jeremiah Masoli, so much different than like a LeGarrette Blount back in the day. And I know LeGarrette eventually came back later in the season after that punch of Byron Howe, but he didn't really have the same success that he did before. Treshawn Holden owned his mistake, literally sat there and was like, all right, I've got to keep mentally strong and mentally ready, waiting for this opportunity. And he hasn't missed a beat, dude. 150 yards receiving? Yeah, Oregon is five deep, and they've got two legitimate NFL talents, possibly three right now, in Holden and Tez Johnson and Evan Stewart.
Yeah, reading Dylan Gabriel ended on this, what he had to say about Treshawn Holden after the Ohio State incident, the way he's practiced, even the past 2 weeks, it's different. I respect him for it. Extremely proud of him, told him that, but got a bunch of belief in him as a player and a person. You just look at it. You just look at a guy that week, and then you look at him now. He's worked his butt off to get to this point. I effing love it for him. I do. I want people to know that there's before and after. There's growth. If you've seen our team, we've continued to grow each week. He's a direct example of that. So
love it.
Trending up. Ducks get a win. Welcome him in Maryland next week. Just a storied matchup between the Maryland Terrapins and the Oregon Ducks. Yeah, we'll have to look up what that historical context is, because I don't know if they have like ever played each other. But let's move on to the rest of the college football world. Oregon State, they had a bye week, much needed bye week this week, but there was plenty of other college football going on. It was a very light week, though. There was not a game. There wasn't a single 7 o'clock, 7:30 kick last night.
I know,
which was disappointing. I love watching college football up until like 11:30 at night.
Last Saturday, you were able to watch it until like 2 a.m. because Hawaii started at like what, 8 or 9? It was a late kick. I was watching football, like college football, at 11:45 last Saturday night.
All right, move on to the rest of college football. We had a big top five matchup, and we had a few top 12 teams take their first loss of the season or second loss. One of them, not surprising at all, but we get into that next. The rest of the college football landscape here on hour number two, Football Sunday, 1080 The Fan.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Looking at the rest of the college football landscape, just a few days before we get our first college football rankings. Boy, it's going to be a rough Tuesday for some folks. They could have a big loss in the election cycle, and then maybe their team doesn't show up in the rankings the way they hoped.
I'm not looking forward to however the world's going to react.
Oh my God, there's people protesting in Georgia and Athens because Georgia is ranked third in the college football playoff rankings? Oh. It's not what I was expecting, Tom. Oh, my God. Penn State students with torches, breaking glass.
Could you imagine?
Because they're outside of the top 10 now.
Like a quad box of, like, real election protests and then college football playoff ranking protests.
We got the octo box here. We got protests everywhere.
Checking in on the violence.
It is the witching hour.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's the protest witching hour.
Taking a look at the college football landscape, some of these top 25 matchups. Georgia escapes Florida. They are possibly a DJ Lagway injury away from losing that game. They were losing that game. And then they had to throw in their essentially third string quarterback because Graham Mertz is injured right now. DJ Lagway, I don't know if it was like a pulled hammy or if it was knee injury. I have yet to see the update on what the injury is, but he has been the only bright spot of that offense when he's played that year, and they were leading, and then he went out, and then they were not leading anymore very quickly. Georgia was able to turn it on. Man, Carson Beck, he is a mess. That offense is gross right now. They need to start figuring some stuff out. But Georgia, the number two team in the land, they live to fight on another day. 34-20 victory. The biggest matchup, of course, was number three versus number four. Two coaches that are absolutely desperate for a big win. And Ryan Day and his Ohio State Buckeyes, they are able to pull it off because they have an offense. Penn State doesn't. Penn State literally scored their one and only touchdown in the first quarter, like I believe on Ohio State's second drive of the day on a pick six. And after that, Penn State was able to do absolutely nothing on offense. Again, I've said this before to my buddy who I do a podcast with. I do not trust Drew Aller because he's got that broccoli haircut. I do not trust anybody with that. If you are a college football quarterback and you have that type of haircut, I do not trust you. Drowler, I think Dylan Raiola also has this haircut as well. Do not trust him, as Nebraska has lost like 3-4 straight games now and lost to UCLA yesterday.
Oh, God. I don't trust Dylan Raiola. Anybody that says they look like another superstar, and which means they will play like said superstar, is just out immediately in my book.
While it is not a top 25 matchup, if Nebraska ends up not going to a bowl game after starting 5-1 this year, I am going to die laughing. Because talk about a complete 180 from where that season was going to where it is now. You lost to UCLA. UCLA cover monsters. Unbelievable. So Ohio State, they win. They're going to jump up to 3, possibly even number 2 with how Georgia looked with Florida. I'm intrigued to see what the College Football Playoff Committee does there.
If Georgia gets 1 first place vote like they did last week, like I will be shocked.
Well, John Wilner still has his vote.
Well, his explanation as to why what was it? Georgia's.
I didn't even read it.
It was that their touchdown or 2 loss to Alabama is better still than Oregon's early season close wins, essentially. And it's really just a shaded way of saying that the SEC is always going to be better than the Big Ten or Pac-12 teams moving to the Big Ten, which I think is bullsh, but, you know, I digress.
Roll through the rest of some of these. Miami rolled against Duke, putting up 53 points. Cam Ward, 400 passing yards and 5 touchdowns. Woof. Tennessee, they are able to have a better second half than the first. They have been a terrible first half team the last few weeks, and they are able to take care of Kentucky, win 28-18. But yeah, Tennessee, they have just been, granted, their first
Yikes.
Their first few games, I mean, and you'd want to look at their schedule. Yes, they beat Alabama, but they, I mean, against Florida, against Arkansas, Oklahoma, and now Kentucky, they have had some slow starts. So, yes, they got the win against Alabama, but, you know, Alabama is kind of showing that they're not the same Alabama from years past. No,
thank God for their running back. I think Sampson's his name. He had, like, 2 tutties last night for the Volunteers.
142 and 2 touchdowns. Yeah,
otherwise, they would be nowhere.
And one of the least surprising upsets of the week, Texas A&M losing to South Carolina. Me and my buddy, we were talking about potential upsets. Where were the upsets of the week that could happen? And that was one of them that we circled. South Carolina is a good team. They almost beat Alabama earlier in the year. They have a really good defensive line. They whooped on Oklahoma the week before. They barely lost to LSU earlier in the season. So we saw that game, being that it was at South Carolina too. We were like, you know, Texas A&M, yeah, they were leading or undefeated in SEC play to start this year. I believe they were 5-0 going into this. Yeah, correct. 5-0 going into this game in SEC play. They get their first SEC loss. Fall 44-20 against South Carolina.
You got a freshman quarterback. Marcel Reed's good, right? But it's going to happen, you know, a time or two a year. You're going to stumble, and or it's not like he's got the experience to lead you, you know, in these games in the trenches. He's literally doing this for the first time. So.
But, you know, if you look at that Texas A&M team, having him at quarterback, I would much rather have him play than Connor Weigman.
I agree. 1,000%.
When you want to talk about cringy quarterbacks, he's one of them.
No, sometimes when you're good, you're good. Chip Kelly literally pushed Darren Thomas out of Eugene to install Marcus Mariota in as a quarterback as a freshman, right? But there were still some stumbling blocks along the way. Marcel Reed obviously has that talent. His coaches know he is that good, but good enough to develop on the fly, but he's still going to have some stumbling blocks. And I'm not saying the game was lost because of him, but he's not experienced enough to get you over the top, especially when South Carolina had such a good game on offense. My goodness, they ran the ball just all game.
And then two teams that were both ranked 11 because they had the same amount of voting points as each other. Iowa State and Clemson, both ranked 11 and both catching L. Texas Tech beats Iowa State in a rainy game in Ames, Iowa, and Iowa State gets their first loss of the season. And Louisville going into Clemson at night. I mean, seeing the Clemson Stadium in a night game, like that is a crazy environment at Memorial Stadium there. But Louisville, unshaken, unwavered, and Dabo, rightfully so, catching some major heat for how he was handling the end of the game. They score a touchdown to go down 26-13, pending extra point or 2-point conversion.
Yeah,
but they say it's like, dude, you got to go for the 2-point conversion, because then that will put you down by
11, which is a 2-point touchdown
and 2-point and a field goal, and he kicks the extra point.
What are you doing?
So now you have to score 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, so and it's giving yourself the opportunity to not have to do that, and if you lose out, you're pretty much forced to and still in the same position that you are now either way, and to not give yourself that opportunity, wow. So in-game management, along with not going to the transfer portal, starting to plague Dabo Swinney, eh?
Yeah, and
it makes too much money.
And then it ended up turning into a moot point because Clemson tried to do an onside kick, which again, if you go for 2 and you get that 2-point conversion, you're not having to do an onside kick with 6 minutes left in the game. Louisville gets the ball at Clemson's 45 and then immediately scores on a 45-yard touchdown right after that to go up 33-14 at that point.
I can't believe that these guys
over.
I can't believe these guys don't have like a time management coach.
I'm sure they do. It's just a matter of, yeah, well, no, we're not going to do that.
But literally, there should be like a rostered coach spot that is named the time management coach. It shouldn't just be like an additional duty. Like, I'm paying this guy $60,000, $80,000, $100,000 a year to come in and specifically tell me, okay, hey, here's the situation, here's the situation. Not everybody is a savant like Dan Lanning, able to just pull these situations out of his booty at a moment's notice. It sounds like Dabo needs some serious help there.
Let's take a break and go through the rest of the top 25. And there is a Big Ten matchup that we need to go over because it's against it was with two teams that are very much not liked in this area of the country. So it's kind of a, you know, it's mixed emotions watching the game. But I was definitely happy with how it turned out. We get to that next here. The rest of hour two, our college football talk here on Football Sunday. But first, Schultzy, Sports Center update. Text from Jeff Deal on the Vancouver Ford text line. Dabo does have a time management coach. He's called God.
Thank you, Deal. And well, that he needs to check in with him a little bit more freaking often.
That just inspired me to go to one of my best resources on the internet, good old ChatGPT.
Yes.
Where I said, can you give me some puns that have to do with football and excuses that Dabo Swinney would say that involves religion? And it gave me 5 here. Sometimes when the game gets tough, I think of it as divine interception. It's all part of a higher playbook.
Yes, divine interception.
When we get to the red zone, it's not just about the strategy. It's about having faith that we can score both on the field and in our lives.
Well, I mean, yes, but yeah, you want to focus on that 60-minute game first there, Dabo.
God, ChatGPT, man. It's just on point sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes it really does nail it.
Our game plan is always inspired from above. When we follow that divine guidance, we can tackle any obstacle.
Hey, man, I'm just assistant to the head coach above.
Go Clemson.
Yeah.
Go Clemson. All right, the rest of college football. Kurt Cignetti, he has got Indiana just trucking along. Just an absolute horse right now.
They got Rourke back, don't they?
They do. And they actually trailed for their first time ever this season. They were down 10-0 at the end of the first quarter. And what did they do? They win 47-10. 47 unanswered points for Indiana. Right now, them and Oregon, the only undefeated teams in this first new rendition of the Big Ten. How about that?
Cool.
Props to Kurt Cignetti. He has just brought an attitude to that team, Indiana, where they just... it is unreal to see how efficient they have been this year on offense and just absolutely just trucking through teams. It is, it's been quite fun. I mean, almost slipped up against Washington, but ended up pulling it out. The rest of their slate goes as follows. They got Michigan next week. Then they will go to Ohio State 2 weeks after that. So they'll get Ohio State after a bye week. And then in-state rivalry against Purdue to finish the year, which will definitely be a W because Purdue is, in fact, the worst team in the Big Ten.
That Boilermaker's not good. It's like Kirk Cignetti thought, oh, hey, maybe I need to act a little bit more like a Pac-12 team coming in. Not totally, but having a high-powered offense is a good thing. Hey,
yes.
Hey, Big Ten coaches, offense is good.
Run through the rest of these top 25 matchups. Kansas State, that is a bad loss, losing to Houston 24-19. And also having that game in the bag, essentially.
I know.
And then losing that game, giving up 14 points in the second half. I mean, that is just not good. I mean, the Big 12, for the most part, was starting to look kind of wide open. I know that Iowa State was undefeated going into this week, as was BYU. BYU getting a bye, of course. But that is still pretty wide open. And you came in at 4-1, and you lose to Houston, who is not a good offense. That's bad loss. Bad loss in their part. The rest of the schedule, ACC matchup, big ACC matchup, because you had two undefeated ACC teams, and SMU and Pittsburgh going into this one. SMU, they have totally turned this season around. Granted, earlier in the year when they lost to BYU, it was one of those like, huh? Like, how, man, you're supposed to be one of the better teams in the college football landscape this year. They started slow against Nevada their very first game, and then taking that loss to BYU, it's just like, man, maybe SMU is not as good as we thought. Well, BYU is undefeated, so they are clearly better than we thought, and SMU right now is tied with Miami for the ACC lead. They are 5-0. So God. SMU getting a big win there.
What a comeback for SMU.
Their season schedule in the ACC, it wraps up pretty nice, too. You have Boston College, Virginia, California. You very well could see SMU winning out and going to the ACC championship.
It only took them 40 years after the death penalty, but they are back because now everybody can pay players.
So SMU bouncing back after their slow start to the season. And again, that has got to be one of the easiest final three games as far as what you're looking at to end the year. Boston College, Virginia, Cal to end their ACC schedule. Army, they continue their undefeated season, beating Air Force 20-3. So good for them. We are getting closer and closer to the huge Army-Navy game where we could potentially have an undefeated Army. Notre Dame is on their schedule coming up soon. So Notre Dame, they could have been very patriotic and losing last week to Navy, but they cared about winning more. Shame on them.
Oh, darn it.
So hopefully Notre Dame can win back some Americans by throwing the game against Army, as they should. If they want to show their true patriotic side, they will lose that game against Notre Dame.
Wouldn't be surprised if they
or
do.
Or against Army.
I'm not really in on Marcus Freeman, though.
So. No, I'm not either, so I don't blame you there. But Notre Dame has responded to their early season woes as well. And then Illinois, boy, they are starting to fall off.
The wheels are coming off, aren't they?
But good for P.J. Fleck, rowing the boat, baby. They get the win 25-17 over Illinois. And so Minnesota, I mean, they might find themselves in the top 25 in this college football ranking that will start on Tuesday.
But speaking of Big Ten teams with limited offense, Illinois, who was ranked like just a couple weeks ago when they faced Oregon.
Yeah, I mean, they were ranked again in this game against Minnesota, but they will probably fall out of the rankings.
Yeah, sorry, when the new ones. Yeah, they were ranked this week.
Yeah,
they won't be.
No, they will not. But one Big Ten matchup last night that happened was against the Washington Huskies and the USC Trojans. And, you know, as Oregon fans, Jordan, we obviously dislike Washington. But there is something great about seeing USC lose the way that they did last night.
I hate Lincoln Riley. And I'm like looking at these two teams just like, which one do I hate more right now? And I had to go with USC. I just Lincoln thinking that he can get any kind of win against any team with no track record at USC to back him up, like, no way. And it just showed last night that their defense ultimately couldn't play a 60-minute game. That there's, even with, like, I like Miller Moss's talent, but I like Will Rogers' talent a little bit better on the other side, and they still have Giles Jackson on their side, and they still have a couple of guys left over on the defensive side of the ball for Washington as well. Not everybody left, so good for Washington getting that win, but both teams suck, and I hate them.
USC, though, I mean, you have the lead going into the fourth quarter, and then you throw an interception. I mean, you go up 21-20, you force Washington to punt, so you're hoping to score again, up by 8, go up by 9, whatever. And then you throw a pick, give the ball right back to them, and then Washington is able to score to go up.
Yeah, an 80-plus yard drive, too. That was, I mean, I think it took, what, at least 4 minutes off the clock, and then USC missed a field goal, so Washington at that point kind of just took it over.
No. So Washington scored about 2.5 minutes. I don't know if you're thinking of the USC drive, but...
Oh, yeah, I think I'm transposing them. My bad.
Washington was able to score and go up 26-21. USC was then able to drive down the field, 15 play, 77-yard drive, 8.5 minutes off the clock. And they get down all the way to the goal line. And it was one of the more head-scratching play call display I have seen from USC. And they get first and goal at the 4. They try and run the ball. They get 2 yards. And so Washington sort of shuts it down. And the commentator in that game, I forget who it even was, he's like, yeah, if you're USC right here, you just keep running that ball to the left side until you punch it in. Just keep doing that, like, because they're not going to be able to stop it. So their second down play, that then they try to throw the ball and pass the ball, incomplete. They then go and back to the run game. They do get stopped for 1 yard. And then on fourth and goal from the 1 yard line, they run a zone read at a shotgun. And so you need 1 yard, you're at the goal line. What should we do? Oh, let's back ourselves up
4 yards.
4 yards by running a run play out of shotgun. And Washington comes right in, blows the play up, 3 yard loss, turnover on downs for USC.
It's a guaranteed tush push situation. You have to put them as close to the line as possible and just give them some push, right? That's the best way to get in there.
And then
set them under the center, something.
Well, and then they have a chance after that to score with about less than, I mean, they get the ball with like 1.5 minutes left.
Oh, and they actually drove down the field.
Yeah, and they're at the 14, and then you get 4 straight incompletions from Miller Moss and the USC Trojans.
That was good pasty, though.
To see them have the lead and then go interception, downs, and downs to lose that game. Again, I know, like, it's one of those lose-lose, like either Washington wins or USC wins, and I don't like either of that, but seeing how USC gacked that game, that was, I very much appreciated that. I liked the way that ended. And then I saw this and I tweeted it out. Apparently in Lincoln Riley's press conference last night, he says, and I quote, "It's not like we're getting our ass kicked," end quote.
Well, oh, God.
So
Lincoln.
One of the best responses I saw for that was a USC fan saying, "I'm about to kick his ass."
That is a good response. Like, a loss is a loss, right? I'm sorry. You can't.
No moral victories.
No, you can't sit there if you're a team sitting at 4-5 and you're telling the media week after week, well, you know, that game was close. Again, well, that game was close. At some point, these losses add up, and it's obvious that you can't make the move at the big point of the game.
So USC now falls to 4-5.
Yikes.
Back-to-back seasons with 5 losses. Through the first 36 games as USC head coach, Clay Helton, 27-9, Lincoln Riley, 23-13.
Get him out.
Well, you're going to be paying a lot. And you paid that dude's mortgage, too.
Yeah, you did.
You paid that dude's mortgage in Oklahoma to come to L.A. Like, I cannot believe it.
Remember when USC was, like, the job? Remember when Lane Kiffin was leaving Tennessee after a season to take the USC job when Pete Carroll hightailed it to the NFL? Like, this used to be such a prestigious position. And Lincoln Riley took it with, like, the prestige almost gone. And he took on all the risk here. And look at what is happening to Lincoln Riley's tenure. Oh, my God.
I'm trying to think of, like, all the big the Power Four conferences. Like, who is, I mean, I would say that probably the most embarrassing team this year is Florida State, considering them being a top 10 team and where they're at now, being able to not score any points, have one of, if not the worst offenses in college football.
Like, Mike Norvell should be ashamed.
And you want to talk about a guy that have fun paying that contract and how do you get that program back to prominence.
It's like the third coach. I mean, they fired Taggart. And that was who they fired Manny Diaz before that. Like, they're literally on their third coach since Jimbo Fisher left them. So,
and they're, of course, writing, articles on the Tallahassee Democrat.
Oh, God.
About what that contract buyout is looking like, because he signed an 8-year, $84 million contract in January.
Sorry, Manny Diaz was Miami. I'm just thinking Taggart.
Yeah.
My bad.
Yeah, all good. So, I mean, Florida State has got to be up there as far as most embarrassing year so far for a big, a Power Four conference, or a Power Four team, rather.
They spent a lot of transfer NIL money. Like, to get guys in there. What are you going to do, man?
But I would say that USC, as far as expectations and that program and the allure that comes with USC, they have got to be number two as far as most embarrassing season, most embarrassing team in Power Four. Some of these teams that are bad, we're not surprised that they're bad, right? Like Purdue, 0-5. Oh, no. Like, yeah, we know Purdue sucks, right? Maybe you could make the case for Oklahoma State being 0-6 in conference, right? Mike Gundy usually has a pretty good team, but they are 0-6 and they have gacked some games.
Yeah, they were starting the season supposed to be a powerhouse.
I mean, Arizona, perhaps, right? I mean, them being 1-5 in conference play.
Nebraska, I think, is a good, you know, good team in that combo.
The way that they've been playing lately, yeah. But I would say as far as teams with higher expectations to start the season, I mean, if you want to take a look at what was the top 25 to start the year, right? We could go down that list, right? The preseason top 25, looking at it right now. You know, Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon, blah, 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 kind of going down the list here. I mean, Florida State, as well documented, was number 10 coming into this season. Utah, obviously that's kind of injury laden, but them being number 12 coming into this season. USC was number 23 to start this season. So not as high as I thought, but also them getting a win against LSU to start the year. Like, people thought, like, all right, this USC team, they could be back, right? They get a win against LSU in the season opener. That's a huge win for them. And they have gone on to go 3-5 since then, with wins against Utah State, Wisconsin, and Rutgers. And if you saw Wisconsin yesterday against Iowa, they're looking like fool's gold after their last few weeks. Just bad. Bad, dude. I don't know what you do. I mean, if you want to talk about buyouts for Norvell, what's the Lincoln Riley buyout look like?
I don't know. I know that Dan Lanning was like ninth in overall buyouts, and I'm not sure Lincoln's was higher than that.
Well, you just start to lose the locker room. Your words fall on deaf ears. Like, these players, they could have your back, but again, what you start to say after a while, it doesn't hold weight, and then you lose inspiration. I mean, it's bad. It is so bad in USC, and I couldn't be happier.
Let's see here. I don't think.
I mean, Arizona, Kansas were also top 25 ranked teams to start the year. But again, like, you don't expect, like,
Lincoln Riley's buyout isn't even in the top 30.
Arizona and Kansas do not have the prestige and the reputation that comes with that job and that school, and as far as what the expectations are, right? So, yeah, it's bad.
I mean, according to numbers, so bad. Willie Fritz at $19 million is the 30th highest buyout in college football. So
who?
Willie Fritz for Houston.
Oh, God.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, and we're looking at, like, Hugh Freeze around, you know, PJ Fleck, kind of guys around that, like, 19.
At least Minnesota's good.
$5 million number. Mike Gundy has a $25 million buyout.
No, he's not. He's going to be there until he dies.
Napier with the Gators has a $26 million buyout. But yeah, so what I'm saying is, a guy like Lincoln Riley's probably not too expensive to move on from at this point. I mean, this is, what, his third or fourth season there?
This is, if he's 23-13 through, yeah, I think this makes his fourth season.
And at that point when he was hired,
head coach since 21, so 21, 22, 23, this would be his fourth season, yes.
I don't think it's necessarily like Lincoln Riley. He was a big name, but he wasn't like the biggest name. I don't think it's necessarily a situation where Lincoln Riley had all the negotiating power, you know, over USC regarding a buyout, so.
Putting in here USC private university, he won't be listed as one of his conferences.
Oh, thank you. Of course. See, I always forget that. Yeah, USC, they never have to put any of these, so we don't know what the hell it's going to be. It could be in the middle of the pack.
All right, we got a couple minutes left in the show. Let's wrap things up here. Football Sunday, 1080 The Fan. All right. Looking at the college football slate for next week, not a lot of, like, huge matchups that I'm seeing. I mean, the only top 25 matchup I'm seeing at this moment is Georgia Ole Miss. We got Alabama LSU.
It kind of ruffles my skirt a little bit.
Let's see what else here. Yeah, that's about it. We got the Holy War, but that doesn't really matter because Utah sucks. I mean, Purdue, Ohio State. Ohio State's going to roll. Miami, Georgia Tech. Miami should roll. That is in Atlanta. Florida at Texas. There's not a whole lot that gets my goat right now. Colorado, Texas Tech. We'll see what happens there because Texas Tech has got a good offense. They're still fighting for a Big 12 crown. With Texas A&M losing yesterday to South Carolina, every SEC team has a loss now.
Love to see it.
So prepare for a wild November when it comes to SEC play. Looking at this Oregon-Maryland matchup for next week, no previous matchups. There is no history between the Terrapins and the Ducks.
So something new.
This is the first matchup ever between these two teams. I will say that, you know, the whole I Like Podols clip?
Yes.
That was in Oregon. That was a local broadcast.
Yes, it was.
So
KGW.
Yes. I think it was at some sort of Halloween event or something like that.
Yeah, that or like one of these fairs or festivals here. Yeah.
Yes. How about that? This is the first of a very storied, long history yet to come between Oregon and Maryland. And right now it's looking like Oregon is opened as like a 25.5-point favorite against Maryland.
All right, so right in between where we said. You said four scores, I said three.
Yeah, yeah. They should absolutely roll. But we are in November. Wild. It happens every year, man. The college football season, NFL season just flies by. And now we are at here at the college football playoff rankings. First one of the season on Tuesday. Jordan, thank you as always, sir.
Appreciate you.
We will catch everybody next week. I believe 8 a.m. is when we're starting next week. I'll have to double check the schedule there as far as what happens with the Seahawks. But Seahawks pregame up next. Seahawks kickoff at 1:25 against the Rams right here on 1080 The Fan. Thank you all for listening to Football Sunday, and we will catch you next week. Peace.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC's senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.